Hello and welcome to Cadaver Cinema Radio. This is Scott Andrew MacArthur. Just a quick editorial note, CCR, as you may or may not have noticed, has been on a bit of a hiatus for a few months, the result of various transitions in our personal lives. And the episode you're about to hear, the episode in which we cover Ben Wheatley's Kill List, was lost in that time. This is entirely my fault. When the show was in limbo, I kind of waited for a little while to post it, and it just kind of over time I just forgot about it, and it got lost in the shuffle. I apologize for this horrible oversight on my part. Either way, we have ironed out all the kinks and details, and Cadaver Cinema Radio will be returning, hopefully sooner than later. The show will be a bit different as Ryan has decided to step down as third co-host, but that's not to say that he won't ever appear on the show again. But for now, CCR is just going to be Dustin and myself. We are considering possibly employing a rotating string of third co-hosts, but as of right now, the show is just going to be us. It's just going to be the duo. At the end of this episode, you will hear the trailer for the indie dramedy Rocket Science, as it was originally planned to be our next episode after Kill List. However, this is not going to be the case, and whenever the next episode is going to be available for your earballs, we will be covering the 1980s. Film Dreamscape. Again, I apologize for the hiatus, and I apologize for my stupidity in forgetting to publish this episode, but either way, hopefully this will tie you over for now, and I hope you all enjoy the lost episode of Cadaver Cinema Radio, Kill List.
One, two, three. Abracadabra.
Hello and welcome to Cadaver Cinema Radio. I'm Dustin Kidd, and this week we got a job to do. Joining me on this assignment is Scott MacArthur.
Hello.
And Ryan Liscote.
Hello.
Today we will be looking at the 2011 film Kill List from director Ben Wheatley. The film tells the story of a hitman who, after a botched mission a year earlier, has come into hard times financially for his family. After his old partner comes to him with a new assignment that promises to resolve all his money problems, he has no other choice but to take it. As we delve deeper into the assignment and Jay comes closer to completing his mission, we find all might not be as it seems and a greater plot may be at hand. The movie stars Neil Maskell as Jay, Myanna Burring as Shell, Harry Simpson as Sam, Michael Smiley as Gal, Emma Fryer as Fiona. The movie is written by Ben Wheatley and Amy Jump. So, Ryan, since this is your first time seeing this movie, what was your experience with it?
Well, as I told you guys before we started recording, I had to miss out on watching Old Boy in order to watch this movie for this podcast. So this had, I was hoping that this would be, you know, pretty good since I was missing out on watching this critically acclaimed film that everyone loves in Old Boy. But as far as Kill List is concerned, I thought it was watchable. I mean, I didn't think the movie was particularly mind-blowing or particularly great. It was just a watchable film to me.
All right, and Scott, you've seen the film before. What are your feelings on the film and your first experience with the film, and where did you come across it first?
How I came across Kill List at first is
It's no secret I'm a big fan of Mark Kermode. And when this movie came out, he was a big proponent of it. He was a very loud voice in its favor. And so it was a movie that was kind of, maybe not for its own favor, kind of mythologized a little bit for me because of the channels that I like to expose myself to. And a few other critics and reviewers spoke very highly of the movie. And so when I finally got a chance to see it, you know, there was a lot of anticipation attached to it. And it was a movie that I want to say on like an atmospheric level and even on like a mood and tone level definitely like hit the mark in a way. But at the same time, I think there are big like narrative and I don't necessarily want to say dialogue problems so much as I don't think Ben Wheatley or Amy Jump, which I would like to take a moment to mention that they are married. Amy Jump is his wife, but I don't think they were worried at all about any sort of like international market because the accents in this movie are sometimes very hard to understand. But as an experience, Kill List.
That's why I watched the movie with subtitles.
Unfortunately, I don't have a version that has subtitles. Take from that what you will, but it's a movie that I think it's an experience that overall works while being extremely frustrating in certain moments. But each viewing, and I've watched this movie about four times now, each viewing I learn more and I understand more and I get more out of it. And I understand like what the whole grand picture of everything that is going on in the movie is entirely and like the thematic carryover of everything, which in a way, when you start to understand, it seems a little bit blunt and a little bit too overdone, and I'll get into that later, but mostly it is a very good movie, but it's not necessarily a movie I understand terribly well.
Well, yeah, like you said, multiple viewings, it seemed to unravel itself more and more at what was going on, and that seems to be the case with a lot of people, and it was the case for me also. You know, multiple viewings really does help this film. This film explains more the more you watch it. So, Ryan, like with your viewing of it, you thought it was just all right and everything. But I would absolutely suggest, you know, give it another watch, knowing what you know and like having seen the movie full. You know, keep everything you've seen in mind and then watch it through again. Because there's a lot of stuff you pick up on after multiple viewings and you more understand after seeing like the final outcome of the movie. And yeah, I agree with you, Scott, that the atmosphere is really, really good in this movie. The atmosphere, the soundtrack, it just all works so well. And the shots that they use, the cinematography is beautiful in this. It's very well shot.
It's one of those things where like the eerie atmosphere and the more, you know, the more sparse and eerie cinematography and all that stuff that really comes out of nowhere in the movie, because it kind of starts out a little bit like a domestic drama about this family that's going through like horrible financial problems, because they don't explain exactly for at least the first like 10 minutes like what Jay does and how they make money. And I really like that part of the movie because there's this whole like interesting experience where you can accept that this movie is about to just become like a, like, despite the fact that it's called Kill List, it could become like a domestic like drama, but then it just becomes this like, it becomes something more. It becomes this like assassination cult movie that we'll get into later when we get into spoilers. But it is, it's one of those movies, it's just like all of that stuff, all the creepy stuff really like creeps up on you.
Well, and a lot of people I've heard say this film is really hard to understand and it's very weird and it's very surreal. But I can understand
I think they're definitely going for it to be surreal.
But I don't think it's...
Like, especially when you...
I don't think it's as surreal as, you know, most films that really are, you know, mind-bending and, like, from alternate kind of realities, sort of, like, this different view of the world and that kind of stuff. I think this film is very much still set in reality. And I think what...
I mean more stylistically.
Stylistically, surreal. Yeah, absolutely. You know,
I think it's trying to give you that feeling that there's something ethereal going on.
And with that, you know, when you find out, and I'll sort of go over this trying to explain the film later on, but which I think I got a pretty good solid explanation of everything and can cover and explain most of the film after a few viewings and stuff and sort of understanding what happens in it. Because there's a lot of stuff that's not explained. And I think that's the biggest thing that really people find so confusing about this film is this film. It doesn't say it doesn't go out of its way to tell this big like picture of explaining everything. No, you're following these two characters and their story that is part of this bigger story. And yeah, I can see some people being like, well, why are you just, you know, they're getting involved in this. Why don't you tell everything and explain everything? But I think the film doesn't need to explain that stuff. And it holds on to that mystery and lets the audience sort of interpret like the bigger picture and like why it's going on. And from that, I do have like my explanation of what's going on in the film. And I've read a few other explanations going on in the film that are somewhat similar to that. But yeah, what are your thoughts on that of just like, you know, it's more telling these characters and what they're doing, and they're a smaller part. Their story is smaller than this bigger part of the story that it's hinting at in the rest of the universe of the film.
What do I think about that? I don't really mind that. Like, that's something that I like to see that in storytelling a lot. I like to see like the smaller slice of the bigger story, as long as it's like interesting and it feels like it's connected to the bigger story in some like, you know, relatively significant way, not necessarily significant, but in some sort of direct way. I bring up Cloverfield as an example of this, but
yeah,
the only problem I have with it is I just feel like it's not clearly explained enough, like exactly what position Jay is being propped up to be by this cult. And that's kind of the problem I have with the whole movie, is I don't clearly understand.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah. Is I don't clearly understand what Jay is being made into.
Okay.
Yeah.
By
yeah,
killing exactly. all these people. And I know that's kind of spoilery, but that's basically the thing you start to realize very early on when they start to take people out, is that Jay is meant for something, and it's never really clearly defined what that something is.
Okay. And along with that, my sort of view and understanding of what the film is and that kind of stuff, I'll go into that and explain, you know, what they are trying to make him into and his positioning in this whole thing. Because throughout the movie, you know, you have these people who are, well, I'll just say it, you have these three targets that he set out to kill. And, you know, you get these strange reactions from them as he's about to kill them. They're saying, you know, they're smiling at him and saying thank you and stuff, and, you know, saying like, oh, you're so great, thank you, I'm so honored and stuff. And, you know, he's just like, what the fuck are you talking about and stuff. And, you know, it sort of riles him up and gets him like even crazier and madder, and that's part of it, you know. And that's
and like Old Boy, there is a hammer in this movie. So
oh,
Ryan,
yeah,
you didn't miss some, you didn't there was one part that you had at least a equal experience with.
I wouldn't say it's on the same level as Old Boy, but
no, but it's brutal.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal still. You get a little glimpse of like what he does, and it's yeah. So what did you guys really like about the film? Like I'll throw it over to Ryan. Like what did you find really effective about this on your first viewing?
I did really like the relationship between Gal and Jay. I thought the actors did a really good job in portraying that relationship, and you know, you really did get the feel that they were guys who've been through a lot together, even though the movie never explains what exactly it was they've done together or what their past is like, because they don't really, there's not a whole lot of background on these two guys. Even with the limited knowledge that we have, the actors do really show that like brotherhood that the two share.
Well, it kind of goes into after multiple viewings, I've picked up on kind of what their past has been. And their past is their old war buddies from like the Gulf War in Iraq and stuff.
But the thing is, I don't really think you need multiple viewings, because there is one scene where they make an allusion to the fact that they were in some like security force together. So like right there, I'm just like, okay, I get it. They were doing that thing. But I really totally agree with that relationship between Jay and Gal, because it is so, anything with Michael Smiley really is pretty great. Michael Smiley is a great actor.
Oh, he does a great job in this.
And I really didn't consider that before you mentioned it, Ryan, but I totally agree with that.
I think he did an amazing job. And I know he's in Ben Wheatley's other film that just came out recently.
A Field in England?
Yeah, which I'm pretty sure you recommended that one to me. I haven't seen it yet. But
it's one of my favorite movies of the year.
Yeah, Justin. It's definitely
so,
on
yeah,
my
I did
list.
Recommend it to you and mostly everyone else.
So yeah, that's one that I'm definitely looking forward to, and that's Ben Wheatley also. So you know, these two seem to be working together, and Ben Wheatley seems to see that this guy does have something that he wants to bring into his films. But yeah, you know, these guys, it does explain that they do have a past. They've been the Gulf War together. They're old war buddies, and coming out of that, it started up like this hitman business, you know, becoming local or hired killers and that kind of stuff. And Jay's wife, she's also, you know, she was part of like military and that kind of stuff, and she actually helps set up
she was part of like the Swedish military guard or something.
And on multiple viewings, you know, I've seen that, like, she's actually part of it. You know, she helps set up the jobs and everything. And
that was another aspect I liked, too, was the fact that they were, that they're, like, all in on it.
They're all in on it. And then, you know,
a family of assassins.
And we later find out that another character is behind all of it, a character that we meet early on and that is not really on screen a whole lot. But yeah, we find out that like all four of them are kind of in on it, but the fourth person out is not really, you know, they don't know that she is in on it. But yeah, you know, we get this idea that they're all after they're all from the military. And then afterwards they started this thing, and then we have this mention of, what is it called? Kiev. We have this mention of this this mission like a year earlier in Kiev, and that something went wrong. And it's not fully explained what exactly happened, but it's very much hinted at in a line that Gal says, where he says, well, at least this time we won't be shooting toddlers, you know. So it's kind of a subtle hint at what may have happened on that mission. So that's kind of where you could see where the character Jay, after that mission, why he stepped away and they've come across these financial issues, is he may be, you know, traumatized or just like horrified or just like, I want to get out of this. You know, I don't want to do this. And, you know, that may even relate to the fact that he does have a son and he has this very strong relationship with his son.
And Dustin, sorry. I do agree with you on the way it's shot too. I'm a big fan of like movies that are set in England. I just love seeing like the long shots, like the English countryside and like the small English towns and everything like that. Really beautiful looking film.
And yeah, this is a very English movie.
Very
yeah, very English. Much
and
so. That,
yeah, and I would definitely say like the atmosphere and the look and the style overall like probably are my favorite aspects of the movie, as well as like the acting and that like relationship between those two characters. And like the real building to something, I really like that experience, even though I don't necessarily know what it has built to. And like, I will say that stylistically, I do think that it's very abstract, especially when you look at look at a field in England. When you eventually see a field in England, maybe we should talk about it, Dustin. But yeah, it's a movie that, like, it's more narratively solid. It's much simpler than Kill List, but it's all atmosphere and style, and very little is being explained. And that's kind of what I love about it. And that's kind of what I love about Kill List, even though with Kill List, I feel like there's more of like a direct story and building to something that's never really fully explained. Whereas with A Field in England, it's just these guys in a field and they're talking, you know? So it's not like, I know it's not really going to go to anything grand. Whereas this movie, I just feel like that last 5 seconds of the narrative, it just kind of like blundered, like explaining exactly what was going on.
And I'll totally agree. I'll give you that. When I first saw this film and that ending came up, the last seconds. Go ahead.
It is effective overall, but it's just like, what was that?
Yeah, you know? It's very like, that's it. And like you, this film was very much hyped up for me. And I was expecting, you know, an hour in, you get to this like, holy crap, like big cultist, crazy surreal kind of stuff, like drug hallucinating kind of, that's what I was expecting. I didn't get that, but this film still, I feel, holds up. And like, I agree with you, Scott, like the more surreal aspects are more in the cinematography and the atmosphere and design of the film rather than the actual like physical on-screen presence and like the world that it's in. And I was expecting more of that, but I think a lot of the weirdness also to most people comes in the multiple twists that you have throughout the film. You know, you do have these multiple plot twists that sort of take you in different directions and you're like, whoa, what's going on here? And it takes you different directions that you weren't really expecting. One being, like I mentioned before, like when they're going and killing these people, they have these weird reactions to him and saying thank you and, you know, smiling and wanting to be killed and that kind of stuff. And that all is part of the ending of what this cult wants J for. But with this film, like, there are some things that I don't really like. And I'll give you that it's not, the writing is a bit clunky in its explanations, and I wish they did kind of explain more, but I do understand kind of what they're going for. And also the ending with that quote unquote big reveal. First time I watched that,
it's a hell of a reveal though.
I called it. And
yeah, but still, it's a hell of a reveal, and there are scenes earlier mm-hmm. in the movie that do lay it out. Like, I wasn't confused, like, what was happening. Mm-hmm. It was just like, why? But, like, I'm surprised you have a problem with that. Okay.
I posted this, like, the other day after I watched this, and I'm like, maybe I'm too in touch with tropes of films now that, you know, these twists and like surprises, and like they don't really surprise me because
you've become a jaded asshole, man.
I know, and I don't want to be. I want to be like, whoa, I did not
you become
that
Josh call. Hadley now, have you, my friend?
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Hi, Josh.
How you doing, buddy?
But no, like with last episode where we were talking about the woman and that kind of stuff, and how I kind of called, like, you know, the rape and the pregnancy and like all this and that. And then,
or
like,
maybe there's
this.
Just so many places that a genre movie can go.
Yeah, it's very true, because, like, you know, it's
because not you. It's the films.
So sort of typical to me to do that twist ending where it's like a reveal. And, you know, I would stack this ending up, like the twist ending kind of up and reveal to like the reveal in a Serbian film, and no one should watch a Serbian film, but I think it was more surprising and effective in that. Yet I still don't recommend that film to anyone. So watch Kill List.
don't watch
a Serbian film.
Because
Kill List has a way better message.
Everything.
It's better everything. And just, you'll feel better.
Is a real movie.
Yeah. And you won't feel like complete utter garbage and trash after watching it, you know. But I felt that was a bit clunky. Some of the parts, they could have been a bit better lit with the cinematography to tell what was going on, because the scene where they're kind of getting chased by the cultists through like the sewers and that kind of stuff.
Really?
Yeah, there was a couple parts where I'm like, am I with Jay? Am I with Gail? Wait, really? What happened? And like,
okay, here's the thing about that, is there's the one thing that I won't fault this movie on, is how it looks, and particularly that scene. This, like, that scene is so well done that, like, I don't really give shit in the moment when I'm watching it, like, who I'm with at that moment specifically. I'm more worried about, like, just like the tension and, like, will the cultist get whoever that is?
Yeah.
And, you know, after they do, I'm sure it'll be revealed who it was.
Well, and with that, I'm not saying I hated that and that ruined the movie. I said it took me out of it a split second and took me from the tension to have to go, wait, am I with Gal or Jay? Or wait, and, you know, it, that split second, it just took me away. But then once I realized, like, okay, I'm with this character and this is happening. And, you know, I agree. The cinematography is beautiful in that scene. And it's just a bit too dark at times that it's kind of hard to tell what's going on. But I love when, you know, they're shining the flashlights, like you they have like the headlamps on, and that's really all you can see in those scenes is the headlamps that they have. And you have the cultists just running around the corner, and you get just this little area of light and just like these cultists running at them, and Gal just like blasting them away with a shotgun. I think that's just a beautiful shot. So, you know, I'm not completely ragging on that scene. I just said, I think at times it just took me out when you couldn't really make out what you were looking at and stuff, because it was a bit too dark, or who you were with. They could have had it lit a tiny bit better, but I guess that adds to the tension. So other than that, I didn't really have too much problems with this film. You know, I didn't really dislike a whole lot, other than some of, like you said, the script, it doesn't fully explain a lot, and I felt it was a bit clunky and in some aspects, but other than that, you know, it's a very solid film.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with you on all the script issues. Like, I particularly don't really like the lack of explanation in a lot of things, and I was just going through kind of like skimming some reviews, and apparently Scott Tobias said he compared this movie to Lost's tendency to set up mysteries without explaining them. And yeah, there is a little bit of that in this movie. And at the end of the movie, you get a credit that says that some of the dialogue was written by the cast. And I wish that wasn't true, because a lot of the riffing just kind of goes nowhere.
Yeah.
And makes scenes seem tedious and overlong. Like, again, like that, like the dinner scene in the movie, mm-hmm. it like goes on forever, and it feels like it's four different scenes just doing different things, and it just it's overlong, and it's too much bullshitting. And like, you get the point of the scene, like, okay, he's taking the job. You get that like really early, and then it just mm-hmm. like keeps going. And like, I have kind of issues with that. And again, this isn't so much an issue, or I don't think it has a justifiable reason to be an issue, but I don't like all of the like heavy accents in the movie. And I've seen Neil Maskell and like a lot of other things. Like, I saw him in this really great show from the BBC called Utopia, which I would, you know, highly recommend to everyone. And he's playing like a character that's totally different than the character of Jay in this movie, but like, he's certainly more understandable. And I don't really like the accents in this movie, and that makes it kind of difficult to really discern what's going on from like a stupid American perspective. I will totally just bow down to the fact that I'm a dumb American, but again, like, atmospherically and definitely tonally, you can figure out what's going on, but there are these what I think are prominent portions of the movie that aren't explained. And I just, like, again, like, when we get into what's really happening at the end, like, I had no idea, mm-hmm. and I can't wait to hear you explain it. So, but it's a good movie. It's I don't think it's as great. It's kind of like with The Woman. Like, The Woman came with a lot of hype too, and it's a movie that, like, I don't think is as great as all the hype has made it out to be. But I do think it's a really significant and really good experience as a movie, regardless of how much of it I understand or not.
Well, I think it's in terms of like comparing it to like The Woman, I'd say it's just,
well, not so much comparing it. Well, yeah. I'm just comparing
the hype, the cultural, and
yeah, the cultural surroundings around it as I went into it.
I just find this movie is a very, very solid technical film. And I think a lot of people realized that and saw that, but also just the tension and suspense that it was able to bring. And I kind of mentioned this in The Woman, our episode on The Woman, how I felt that didn't work so well in that film. And I felt this film, it was able to hit those marks and really build that tension and suspense and really like kind of grip me and bring me in and like have me on the edge of my seat. And there was very rarely any cases where that was killed, you know. Yes, this film had a lot of hype. It was one of those cases where, like, you know, it was getting praised. People were saying, like, best horror film of 2011. I wouldn't say best.
It was getting compared to The Wicker Man, the original Wicker Man.
Yeah, which I
can... That's big.
That's really big, you know. And I can...
Honestly, I thought about that when the climax came up. It reminded me of The Wicker Man, like, immediately.
Well, it's very much, it has a lot of aspects that could be inspired by Wicker Man. So, you know, sorry, Scott, were you going to say something?
No.
Oh. But no, yeah, like, I do agree. You know, you have like the cult sort of aspect of it and everything that you could easily be borrowed from, like, you know, The Wicker Man. And I did see that also. And I can see how people can compare that. But, you know, best
aesthetic.
The aesthetic also, yeah. But a lot of people were saying, you know, best of 2011, you know, this film. And I'd put it up there as, like, you know, one of the really good films that, you know, people should be checking out. But I wouldn't say it's best. I'd have to go through a list and say, like, yeah, I'd have to look. I because I don't feel comfortable saying, like, man, this is the best horror film of 2011, because I don't have that information right in front of me to look through and really say, well, you know, this film and this film also came out that year and stuff. So, you know, maybe with that information, I'd be able to give it a proper ranking at where it sits personally for me in 2011. But yeah, a lot of sites were saying, like, best, and then a lot of people were very put off by this film also because of the script, just like this is too weird, this doesn't make sense, this is, you know, an underwhelming kind of,
oh, it's a British horror movie that doesn't make sense, no
yeah,
way,
you know, but like,
no fucking way.
People just very much put off by this film and just saying this sucks, you know, people just really not liking it and stuff. And there was very rarely any other middle ground, and I think that the whole, like, this sucks kind of got amplified because of the
internet
people
mentality.
Because of the people who are like, this is amazing. And, you know, I agree with you. It's a great film. It's a good film. It's not the best. I'd say in the past 10 years, it's one to check out. It's one of the ones that you know, you should check out. But yeah, I wouldn't say it's amazing or incredible, but it seems to do what it wants to do and get that across.
Yes, it does.
Kind of. As it should.
It gets what it's trying to get across.
Yeah, just
Well. And that's something else I actually don't like about the movie. I forgot to mention is that when we get into the themes, and maybe I'll save this more for that, it very much drives its themes home really hard.
Oh.
Almost to the point where I get very, very annoyed because I feel like it's treating me kind of like I don't get it. So, mm-hmm. And that's one thing about the movie that I do get is what it's trying to say and what it's trying to do pertaining to things like child abuse and child molestation. And it just gets to a point where it's like, I get it, movie, stop. So
there's a lot of that, like domestic violence and that kind of stuff. And yeah, no, I agree, especially. And I think that might have to do with some of the, like you said, the ad-libbing from the actors and that kind of stuff, because it seems, it kind of seems realistic in some cases, you know, where
I've heard reports, though, that the dialogue, what was mostly improvised was the stuff in that dinner scene.
Oh, OK. Yeah. And I can understand that. But I can kind of see that. As that did kind of feel, you know, very ad-libbed, very kind of realistic, off the tongue kind of stuff. But, you know, even some of the reactions from out of nowhere, kind of like how Shell would like flip out at Jay and stuff after like just a line and stuff. I felt that was kind of realistic, you know, and I feel like the relationship that them two have in this is pretty realistic to an actual like domestic kind of you know, in the gutter, kind of what do we do kind of relationship that it was, you know.
I wouldn't say I have issues with the movie itself. It may be more just like my expectations or just like how I process films. Like, I do not think this was a bad film at all. I don't think it's a great film, but it's a good film. It's a very watchable film. It's just maybe I didn't have like the right frame of reference to watch this with. Like, as I was watching it, like, throughout most of the film, my reaction was, it's a decent, like, Hitman movie. Mm-hmm. It was decent. It's one of those films where it would have been a good representation of its genre, but maybe not one that you would, like, highly recommend to people.
Yeah.
Like, it's one where it's like, you know, if you like this genre, maybe you'll like this. But it's not like a title that, you know, like if someone was like asking like five Hitman movies, like I don't know if this would be one that I would throw in there.
Have you seen like The Wicker Man, though?
The original Wicker Man? Yeah, I've seen it.
Not the Nick Cage one, of course.
Yeah, I've seen
okay,
both of them.
Okay.
But I was going to say, like, when the ending comes along, like, it was interesting, but like I wasn't particularly floored by it or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
When it came along, I'm just like, well, that was kind of cool. But that was kind of my reaction. It was like, it was kind of cool.
Because when I heard about the movie, like the comparisons to The Wicker Man were like up front. So like I was expecting it to go in that direction. Mm. And so I'm curious, like when you saw that happening, Ryan, like did you take it as being like ludicrous, or did you roll with it? Did it feel like it came out of nowhere? Or did it feel like, because for me, even the first time I watched it, it felt like if I didn't get the whole like Wicker Man reference, then I don't think I would have understood like where all of this came from. More or less.
Well, you know, it's funny you bring that up because I knew that there was supposed to be a twist ending because I saw Dustin's post on Facebook about, you know, how I forgot exactly what it was you said, Dustin, but you
basically that I feel that I've come to like too used to the tropes of like horror cinema,
that's what
and
you're
that
saying
kind of stuff
on Facebook, and
that it doesn't
like,
surprise
okay,
me.
So there's a twist in here somewhere. I got to keep an eye on it and see what this is. And I actually had to watch this movie in chunks because I went to go grab dinner. I watched one half at one point, then the other half later that night. So to answer your question, Scott, when that scene came, I knew there was going to be a twist coming, but I didn't know it was going to be that exactly. So I was like, okay, this is a little
Dustin
out there,
us.
But let's
Dustin.
Roll with it. Yeah.
No, but that's the thing is this movie very much sets it up and a lot of people like – a lot of this film really sets itself out there as, you know, there's going to be a twist. There's going to be, you know, and you get that from the beginning that there's going to be this.
You get that from the second that Michael Smiley takes out a giant machine gun.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, this isn't going to be just a movie about a family going through financial issues.
But the thing is, with this movie, you not only have that twist and reveal at the ending, you have multiple ones. And I think why, you know, for Ryan, with you viewing and that kind of stuff, a lot of it, you know, there was a lot of hype with this film when I first watched it. There was a lot of hype I was carrying into this film, and is very much sort of, you know, it was building up these scenes and it was getting tense and I was like into it and everything. And then, you know, it'd be like, boom, twist, and it'd be what? You know, it's like a lot of buildup of just like, you're like so into it and it's being like, oh, it was more like, what? Mm. And that's what this film kind of is. It's that buildup and then the, wait, what? You have to take that second take of it. Because, you know, with, like I mentioned with the killings and that kind of stuff, and, you know, you have the first target, the priest, you know, you expect them, you don't really expect him to be smiling, be like, thank you, yes, kill me and stuff. And that's sort of the one of the early kind of twists where it's like this buildup.
But that's such a, it's every time that happens though, where he's being thanked, it's such this, like, it's such a great moment.
Oh yeah,
it
yeah.
works so effectively in the movie.
Well, yeah, when I'm saying like you have this build up and then what, I'm not saying like it's the film completely, it loses me. Mm. Like, and it, I'm not saying that it lost me when I was first watching it. It was more like this build up and then, you know, you have this build up and then I'm like, what? Oh, wait, okay. So yeah, it still had me. The film still had me even when it threw, like, you know, these, like, out of nowhere punches at me.
And I think that's kind of the more interesting moments mm-hmm. in the movie because they allude to the bigger plot of what's going on. Yeah. I love those moments in those movies where mm-hmm. it's a small part of a bigger story where you get, like, the crossover where you're seeing the bigger story. Mm-hmm. Invade the small story a little bit, or the small story invade the bigger story, what have you, you
but
know?
I feel with like those stories that do tell like have that bigger story and, you know, they're telling the smaller story within that, at the end you have that full kind of explanation usually, or that reveal that does explain everything and you go, oh, whereas this film it's kind of like, what?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
And whereas with a movie like Cloverfield, mm-hmm. why I would say it's like that and why I would say it has a proper crossover is because there's a moment where they actually encounter the creature. So
yeah, yeah.
So that's not so much thematically as it's more like literally in the action plot of the film. So
right now we're going to take a break. And once we get back, I'm going to try and explain the film kind of to these guys. And hopefully, you know,
we'll see the light.
See the light and kind of understand it a bit more.
We'll wear the wicker crown. We'll understand our position.
Do you want 100% uncut horror? All the blood, all the nudity, all for free? Then go to American Horrors at Filmon.com. Owned and operated by the publisher of the Jeffrey Dahmer comic and author of Poems for the Dead, Hart D. Fisher. Go now to American Horrors at Filmon.com and experience what real fear is.
Movies need only three things. Badasses.
You tell me who you want done, and I'll do the hell out of it.
A chick with drive who don't take no jive.
Boobs.
Do you know that the female breast, known to be the source of life since Eve, can be deadly weapons?
And body counts.
Count, the mathematics of murder and menace.
The BBNBC podcast discusses lesser known action, exploitation, and horror cult cinema. You can find the show on iTunes, Stitcher Smart Radio, and SoundCloud by searching for BBNBC podcast. You can also listen to each episode directly on the show's website at badassesboobsandbodycounts.com.
Got the goddamn message? Let's go to work.
I know you. I'm watching you right now. Not really. Or maybe I am. However, I guess you're sat there late at night, probably not wearing much and scratching yourself, scouring some podcast-providing service, desperate to find the one glimmer of hope in a sea of blabbermouth halflings expounding their opinions to nobody. You like B-movies, but which B-movie podcast do you pick? Well, look no further. Bypass the rows and rows of other shiny shows and delve instead into the beautiful and brilliant B-movie Bargain Bin. You know how you know it's good? No, it's not just the beards the hosts have, although that's a definite plus. It's the films. It's the fun. That's once a month at bmoviebargainbin.com. Two men, two beards, two films, one show, the B-Movie Bargain Bin. We can't and won't be better. Come on down today to bmoviebargainbin.com. Just off Route 49 next to the store with all the stuffed sheepheads in the window. We dog it.
Hi, I'm John Water.
Hi, this is Dolph Lundgren.
Hi, I'm Lance Henriksen.
Hi, this is Keith Gordon.
Robert Kuhn.
Miguel Ferrer.
Nancy Allen.
Robert Davi.
Richard Elfman.
Ileana Douglas.
Patrick Warburton.
Wingshauser. Cliff DeYoung.
Steve Railsback.
Mr. T.
William Cass.
If you haven't been listening to the Projection Booth podcast, you're missing out. Each week, the Projection Booth brings you in-depth discussions of some of the most interesting movies ever made. I'm Mike White. No, the other one. I'm the guy who wrote the film fanzine Cashiers to Cinemart since 1994. Since early 2011, I've been co-hosting the Projection Booth podcast. Try us, won't you?
I never try anything. I just do it.
Visit the Projection Booth at projection-booth.com.
Do you like movies? Do you like beards? Do you bathe in raw meat? Do you dance under the fiery sky of Ra, daisies threaded through your man-chest mane? Foolish question. Yes, we all do. But do you do it listening to the podcast from the After Movie Diner? If not, then you're missing out, and you may or may not spend eternity in insufferable torment, wedged between Simon Cowell and Piers Morgan in an elevator that smells of death. The After Movie Diner is a website dedicated to movies. New, old, large, small, and of every genre. There are written reviews, interviews with the famous and interesting, and a weekly podcast with comedy, reviews, interviews, a variety of fascinating and flatulent co-hosts, and music to tap your toe to. So why aren't you on board? Get there or miss out on the podcasting sensation of a generation, one that feels like being slightly tongued by an over-enthusiastic Cocker Spaniel. Find us on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, TalkShoe, and over at aftermoviediner.com.
Looking for something to fill that deep, horrible, dirty void inside? Then look no further than the podcast Under the Stairs. Join your host, Duncan McLeish, and guests as they dissect horror films, old and new. No film is too gory. No film is too scary. No film is too violent for the podcast Under the Stairs. The podcast Under the Stairs can be found at podcastunderthestairs.wordpress.com or on iTunes. The podcast Under the Stairs is a proud member of the League of Extraordinary Podcasts. To avoid fainting, keep repeating to yourself, it's only a podcast. It's only a podcast. It's only a podcast.
I just wanted to say thank you to Justin. His teachings have helped me put everything in perspective. I haven't had an anxiety attack in 3 weeks.
Stuart. Don't listen to that.
It's like a fucking worm boring through my skull.
It's like a graveyard. And they still fucking plod up next to us.
Why I thought you could intersect with the group. Because right when I saw you having trouble rationalising your emotional response to Duncan's departure.
Can't wait to see him rationalise your emotional response.
Don't. I'm going to kill him, Gav.
Don't kill him, bit.
I am. I'm going to massacre that table of people now. In a hotel. And I ain't going to shoot them, Gav. I'm going to do them one at a time, and I'm doing them slow.
A butter knife?
Yeah.
We should have a song. We should have a song.
Okay, shall I get the old guitar?
Oh, fuck, here we go. You're expecting Jeremy Beadle, aren't you? But he's dead, he can't help
you.
He's
not going to play that guitar in here, is he?
Christian soldiers marching as to war with the cross of Jesus going Amen, Christian soldiers.
You're giving me indigestion.
Oh, sorry.
Apology accepted.
Sometimes God's love can be hard to swallow.
Yeah, no, it's hard as a dinner plate.
God loves you.
Does he? Well, tell God from me, if you're the type of people he hangs about with, stay out of my way. No more guitar, mate. Not in restaurants. There's a time and a place. And your time and a place is in a very isolated location where no one's likely to be for about a fucking 100 years. Okay?
All right, welcome back to Cadaver Cinema Radio. We're still talking about Kill List, and right now we're going to kind of get into the plot and what goes on throughout the film. And I kind of talked about it a bit before the break, but I'm going to really try and get into it now and explain it to you guys. So basically, the whole plot is the cult.
Hit us, Dustin.
I'm going to hit it. Okay.
Hit it hard, baby.
So the main plot and the main goal of the cult in this film is to basically turn Jay into their new messiah, or like a new antichrist kind of deal. And doing that, you know, I mentioned before, you know, he has this military past, and then they have that job that they messed up. But, you know, he is a killer, and they sort of see that in him, that he has like this cold kind of exterior and this ability to kill and, you know, get very angry and brutal. And along with that, I think once we get to the dinner scene, that's where, you know, things get set into place and the cult kind of their plans in motion. So at the dinner scene, Gal brings a lady friend named Fiona. We're kind of sort of introduced to her. And we had that dinner scene that you mentioned before, Scott, where Jay completely flips out and trashes the dinner scene, and she's sort of just left there sitting. It is a really great moment. It's very tense and suspenseful and just like, it's really uncomfortable.
Yeah, there are some, for as, you know, messy as the dinner scene is, there are some fantastic moments in it. So,
but during that scene, during the dinner party and that kind of stuff, we see a scene where Fiona goes to the bathroom and
another great moment,
and carves the symbol of the cult into the back of the mirror. And with that, that's her sort of marking Jay as, you know, this guy's the one. After seeing him flip out like that, that's her saying, like, this guy's marked. He's going to be the one that we're going to use.
Mm. Can I take a second and ask about the symbol?
Yes.
And particularly the beginning of the movie where they, like, the symbol is like being drawn out on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Did anyone else find that a little bit cheesy? Like, kind of like 80s horror movie cheesy?
It kind of remind me, it did, yeah, I do agree with that. It's a kind of 80s horror movie cheesy, but I think that might be even like a throwback to something like Wicker Man, that, but also, you know, something like Seven, you know, where you have the intro where you have this, you know, jotting of notes and that kind of stuff, and like the all this stuff going on and these different crazy kind of flashing shots. And I think it might have been in that kind of vein, and I didn't think it was bad.
All right.
You know?
It didn't bother me any.
Yeah. So anyways.
I'm a cynical asshole. Okay.
But after the dinner scene, you know, we have this talk of this job and everything. And Jay, they go to this job and they meet the client and everything. And we meet this old man who turns out to be the cult leader at the very end.
Is it him?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Him, the doctor that we meet later on, and Fiona.
Yeah, no, I knew about the doctor. Mm-hmm. I got the doctor. And I knew about Fiona. And Fiona never felt like the leader.
No, she wasn't the leader. She was a part of it, though.
Yeah.
And
I took it literally when she said human resources, that she's
human
the
resources,
person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I took it literally that she's the person who picks people for the cult. So,
so yeah. And so we have that scene where the leader, he cuts his hand. They do like a blood pact kind of blood contract kind of deal, and
great moment.
That's especially when he's like running it under the water and like the blood's just coming out and stuff. Yeah.
Oh,
and
really
opens
that hand up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we do have that scene where the cult leader cuts his hand and everything and does this blood pact kind of thing and sort of, you know, indoctrinating him into the cult kind of deal. Then later on, we have the rabbit who is killed in their yard. And he thinks, oh, it's just the cat and everything. But you can kind of see it as it was one of the cult members or Fiona who did it. And then he takes it, cooks it, eats it. So that's sort of, you know, him getting more into,
which,
like,
is fucking weird to me.
Like, it's weird in the first
from
place,
a psychological standpoint. I'm just like grossed out. And from a vegetarian standpoint, I'm just like particularly like grossed out by that. So because it's not even like a dead rabbit. It's literally just like rabbit guts.
Yeah.
It's so weird. Oh, I'm going to take that and cook it. Okay.
But that is kind of like the first part of the what the cult leader says is the reconstruction. You know, you do have that one scene where he says, this is not a job, this is a sort of reconstruction. So that's sort of Jay accepting the sacrifice of the rabbit. He doesn't know of it, of course, but that's sort of the beginning of this whole transformation and his acceptance into this cult completely. And so then we move on to the targets, which we have the priest, the librarian, and the MP,
which come with great title cards.
They each have their own title cards and that kind of stuff that sort of introduces their segments and stuff. But if you look at who
and
the
I
targets
think
are,
when the first title card pops up, that's when the movie like really gets going.
Yeah, that's when it really does. And you know, you do have that beautiful shot that I posted on Facebook of like them getting out of the car and like the rainbow over it. It's a very, very nice shot, but it's at the same time very unsettling. And that's, I love that shot. And that's sort of the beginning of where this all, like you said, the film really starts and gets going and stuff. And you look at the positions of these targets that he has, the priest, the librarian, and the MP. And all of them, you know, they have a positions in society. You know, the priest, he provides religion to the people and everything. The librarian provides knowledge, and the MP, a position of leadership and that kind of stuff. And with all these positions, we, you know, see that there is some sort of darker kind of corrupt side to them. You know, the priest, you know, he's
so-
like,
basically, what you're trying to say is like the priest provides spiritual guidance, the librarian provides a record, and the MP provides leadership.
Yes, in a way. Yes. So it's these positions of power in a way. And
positions of significance and importance in society.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and, you know, the priest, it's kind of obvious, you know, with the cult and everything that, you know, kill a priest and he's a sacrifice for that. But also, you know, like they all have their sort of darker secrets and that kind of stuff. You know, he's out back smoking, that kind of stuff. And maybe that's not so bad and everything, you know, but you know, you get to the librarian and you find this this storage where he has this like horrible collection of like smut, just snuff films and everything that we don't actually get to see.
Yeah. And but, with children, and it's implied with children.
Yeah. And so with that, you know, you have Jay sort of delving more into this position that they want him to go into, of this like destructive, like angry killing machine kind of. And after seeing these videos, he has that breakdown where Gal's just like, oh, God, turn it off. You know, that's messed up. But with Jay, he has this real breakdown and he's just like, we got to find the people who are, you know, really behind this. And they go to this junkyard. And basically he just goes in and we don't see this. We're left in the car with Gal and he's told like, wait 20 minutes. If I don't come back, you know, 20 minutes, come in, find me. And I love this shot right here where Gal's just like, OK, 20 minutes up, let's go. And we have this very, you know, steady cam kind of shot of him getting out, getting the shotgun out of the back. But as soon as like he starts to walk into the junkyard, it's kind of like they pick up the camera and just like follow him. And I love that because that adds that suspense of like, you know, what's going to be around every corner and stuff. And the cinematography and like the angle that they have the camera at. I love it.
Yeah,
like,
that was
really well done.
I'll agree with that.
That was a great part. And when they go in and they find Jay just like wailing on that guy.
Oh, just mashing his face into the like the wall and stuff. And then, you know, he just, when they're like, oh, he's just like, oh, 20 minutes up already? Oh, I didn't know. And then he just like shoots the guy in the face. Or Gal's just like, what are we going to do with that guy? And he just shoots him in the face. And, you know, we get this, he's going more over the edge. And early on, you have these scenes where he's trying to, you know, reconcile with his family and show his compassion and make amends with them and stuff. But as we get more and more in the film, he just starts to completely lose control and just become this angry, destructive person. And that's part of what the cult's plan is. So we later, they have the third job and that kind of stuff. They go to outside the MP's house, and that's where we get the introduction of the cult, as they're camping out in the forest and everything, and all of a sudden this huge lineup of just cults.
We hear this cultists. Whistling.
Yeah.
Far off whistling.
They have like these flame torches and everything, and they're having like a cult ceremony and that kind of stuff where they're sacrificing people and hanging them. And that's sort of the MP's kind of darker side of he's part of this cult that he's, you know, they're having this ceremony in like his yard and stuff. And, you know, Jay and Gal, they get close to and try and observe it. But once they start trying to sacrifice people, Jay starts opening fire. And that's where we get, you know, this pretty much
great chase scene.
This great chase scene of yeah. like hundreds of cult members just chasing them through the forest and through this like sewer line, this like old stone sewer line, and you have great scenes. And unfortunately, you know, Gal doesn't make it through there. He gets disemboweled by one of the cult members.
Actually, Dustin, I hate to interrupt, but I was curious about this. Does Gal have anything to do with this whole cult thing, or was it just
I was actually gonna bring that up. And with what you said also with his wife, his girlfriend. No, it's just his girlfriend, but we do have that subtle hint that he may have some idea what's going on, because like the targets before, he's disemboweled and he's dying and stuff, and Jay shoots him as a mercy kill, put him out of his misery and that kind of stuff. But right before that, you have him saying, you know, thank you. So it's kind of like this implied, like, is he part of it? Is he not? Like, what's, you know, going on with that? But throughout most of it, it doesn't seem like he is, and I really don't think he is. But after Jay escapes, you have him, Jay, going back to his wife and son, who they went to the cottage and everything to just get away from it, and like, you know, they couldn't really take Jay anymore, as you know, he's sort of going more and more over the deep end and getting just losing control and stuff. And you know, and throughout the film we find out that Fiona's been dropping by a lot and spending a lot of time with Shell and that kind of stuff, and that's sort of her way of kind of keeping an eye on him and stuff, because Shell is still, you know, she's the contact with she's the one who kind of signed, like, set it up and everything, and got them in touch, and does like the contracts and stuff, like sets up the contracts for them and everything, and gets them in touch with these people who want, you know, them to do these hits. So, you know, it's sort of Fiona keeping an eye on Jay and making sure things are going well and stuff. And Jay makes his way out to the cottage and meets up with them, and basically, the cultists follow him out there, and they go to try and escape, and they slash the tires. And then he goes out and tries to get rid of them, like kill off a few and stuff and check it out. But then some of the cult leaders get into the house. And I love this part where we have Shell, like she we actually see that she does have actual like military background and that kind of stuff, of where she has the silencer and she's shooting something.
Oh, she gets badass for that yeah. scene.
No, and I love that, because it's so true to like what they actually teach you in stuff in like spec ops and that kind of stuff, of like two shots, like one, I think it's like one to the body, one to the head or something. And you know, you see her doing that. And I love that they do show that. And, instead of just like rhyming it off as, you know, oh, she has background military, like they actually show it and you're like, damn. But unfortunately she does get captured. I don't know if we really see it though. I forget. I don't think we really see it.
It's implied. You hear a window shatter and you see her like, what?
Yeah. 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 I remember that. Okay. So we have that. Mean? And then we have Jay. He gets knocked out in the woods by one of the cult members, and he's brought into this circle of this ceremony and sacrifice and that kind of stuff. And they strip off his shirt, give him a knife, and
the music gets weird. Yeah. And like, it's
so basically we're introduced to his last and final target, which was not spoken of beforehand.
I think
earlier on they say four targets, but to their understanding, they're only told about three. I think I remember them mentioning four targets at one point, and you know they're only aware of the three. So we have this final target that he's put up against, and he's in this circle, and he's stripped of his shirt and given a knife, and all we see is they give him a one of the straw masks. And another thing, there's a lot of stuff about like rabbits in that, and at one point during that shot, like where he's fighting the hunchback and everything, his mask very much looks like a rabbit. You know, you have where it's slightly parted in the middle, and then like the nose on it, it's a triangle shape, and it kind of represents kind of a rabbit in a way. I saw that in some shots, and I don't know if that's an actual thing that's continuing without the film, like a continuing theme, because you have the rabbit that's sacrificed, you have the rabbits that they eat while they're camping and stuff, and then, you know, that final scene. Hmm. But
I think the movie just has a good sense of mm-hmm. call and response.
Yeah. And I think
a lot of scenes, but next time I watch the movie, I'll have to look at the masks closer, because I don't really, none of them really jumped out particularly as like a rabbit mask. But
I kind of at first I didn't see it, but in some shots, I don't know if this is a continuity problem where you know, it was a different mask and different shape kind of thing, and they just didn't catch it. Because at the end of it, where you know, we do have this big reveal, the mask is different, but in some of the shots it was very clearly kind of parted in the middle and very much rabbit kind of looking. But essentially we meet this hunchback who has this blanket thrown over it and everything, and a mask on it, a very large mask, and it's wielding a knife also. And basically Jay just loses it and stabs it to death, and it's revealed that under the sheet, the hunchback was his wife with their son strapped on
her
back and stuff.
And it's a callback to an earlier moment where they're playing with styrofoam swords
in the yard and everything. And it's almost kind of exact, because you have seen in that scene where the son's on Shell's back and everything, and she has the sword, and then Jay has a sword also, and she falls over on the ground, and Jay stabs her with the styrofoam sword in the stomach, and you know, she plays dead and everything. And you know, that's kind of mimicked in this final scene, and that we have that reveal, and it's never really said specifically why she laughs. All we know, all that's been revealed really is by Ben Wheatley himself on Twitter, is that she's not part of the cult. He specifically said she's not part of the cult, and her reaction is more like kind of shock, kind of disbelief and horror, or kind of just like, you know, well, you've really become something now. Are you happy? Kind of reaction, like you've really become a monster. That's sort of what the cult ultimately wanted, is, you know, that's the ultimate sacrifice, is to sacrifice his wife and child and that kind of stuff, and he becomes the messiah of this cult. So that's basically the sort of explanation from my point of view of the whole movie. So it's sort of this, you know, stereotypical kind of like satanic kind of cult sacrifice ritual ordeal that we're not seeing firsthand.
And I guess that's my problem, because my whole question is like, why? And why with Jay, and for what reason?
I think, you know, it's because of his, just like how he just, you know, he is a killer. And like I said before, he's very cold and heartless and brutal. And it gets worse and worse as it goes on and stuff. And I forgot to even mention, like, the doctor, when he goes to the doctor, because his hand, the cut that the cultist leader cuts in his hand, that's becomes infected, and it's like all on his body is gross. Sort of gross and like and yet he goes to the doctor, and the doctor's asking like, you know, how's your family life, how's your sex life, and all this kind of stuff, and it's like, what does that have to, you know, do with anything and stuff, and not really asking about the hand, which is why he goes there.
And he's asking like, where's the other doctor and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you get, like something is definitely wrong.
It's very there. Rosemary's Baby-esque of, you know.
Yeah. It is.
And that's where I kind of connected the whole satanic cult kind of thing.
Yeah, and I guess, so I guess, like, the movie, like, we're supposed to take the movie from the perspective that we're, like, just as in the dark as Jay is.
Absolutely, and that's what I see it as, and I think,
and that's what a lot of people... that's what makes it frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, yeah. And I can see that. That can be very frustrating, and the first time I watched it, yeah, it was, like... Well, why aren't they telling us this? Why aren't we, like, why are they doing this? What did he become? Like, they put the crown of the straw crown on his head and stuff. And one thing to look at when he kills, you know, he sacrifices, like, his wife and his son, no emotion. And that's, I think, like, the biggest thing is, you know, at the beginning you have him trying to make amends with his family and, you know, coming down and just being like, you know, stay cool-headed and everything, but he starts to lose it more and more and become cold throughout the film and just this sick killer, just like brutal. And then at the end, you just no emotion, completely cold. And he's ultimately just, he's sacrificed his family. He's lost everything basically. And he's brought up to be this messiah of this cult. And I'll agree with you. It doesn't hit as hard as you expect it would.
Yeah, it just, I don't know, being as in the dark as Jay is with everything, like, I don't get, like, the what's the point?
It's an interesting concept, and I think that's,
you know, and I don't,
supposed to be, is just an interesting concept and look at it, whereas yeah. Rosemary's Baby, we kind of get that explanation of, like, what these cult members are doing, you know, we see when they're doing the ritual and that kind of stuff and what's going on and kind of what's going on behind the scenes and stuff.
Yeah, I just wish that we saw that in this movie, if there was just like that little mention at the end, then it would make everything make more sense.
Yeah, all we really have is this reveal of, like, the doctor was in on it, Fiona was in on it, and she's the person who, like, gets these people, hence, like, why she marks the mirror, like, she's chosen Jay and stuff, and then you have the cult leader coming back, and all they do is, like, remove, like, their masks and their hood and stuff, and it's just, all it is basically sound design there. There's no dialogue or anything. They, you know, all the cult members, they just clap, and then they crown him. And that's basically all we really get. There's no real explanation of why. And I think that's more what Ben Wheatley was going for of, like you said, just like, we're as in the dark as Jay. And yeah, I can see, like, it more of as an experiment of trying to do this of, like, what if, you know, we were as knowledgeable as this character?
Yeah. I don't know, but it still is a pretty great scene.
Mm-hmm.
And the music is so haunting and... It has those stylistic moments that you see throughout the entire film in that scene. It's a very good scene, regardless of the fact that I have no idea really what's going on sometimes when I'm watching it. So
the sound design is beautiful in this.
Yes, it is.
It is amazing. You know, it put me in the kind of places kind of a David Lynch film does with his kind of sound design. He has amazing sound design throughout his films and stuff, and I could see that definitely as, like, an inspiration for this film, as throughout it you know you'll have these quiet moments, or, you know, you'll have these moments of just this repetitive just noise, like this ambient just sting just repeating, and that's all you can hear sometimes, or sometimes it's just in the background and everything, but then, like, you know, you have these moments of silence or parts where there's no sound at all and that kind of stuff, or we hear something else over, you know. And I love the sound design in this film, and you know, any film, I love any film that really goes all out with this sound design and, you know, is able to pull it off like this film does. So I have major appreciation for that. So
it's a good movie.
It's a good movie. So Scott, after explaining sort of what's going on and with the film in my sort of way, I don't know if that's right, because I don't exactly.
For the most part, like, it makes sense. And I can get that from, you know, watching the film enough times, but I don't know, maybe if it was like a movie that was like, very similar to this, but still didn't have that last 5 seconds where like things were explained, I think I still would have problems, you know. I think it's just like that inherent, like, I just want not everything clarified, just like what was that? You know, like what does this mean that now he's the Antichrist, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, you get an explanation. Another movie I was thinking about comparing this to, not only Rosemary's Baby, but, like, The Last Exorcism. Like, even at the end of that, you get a little bit of an explanation of, like, what the hell's going on. But I don't know. It's still a good experience. But the problem I have with the movie is the fact that it's very, very heavy and kind of overbearingly so on its themes.
Yeah.
Especially when it pertains to children and, like, abuse towards children.
I'm actually kind of curious to hear you talk about this, Scott, because I didn't really feel any of that as I was watching. Not really.
Really? Okay. Well, when they get the job killing the priest, they speculate as to what he did, and they talk about, like, maybe he's, like, a diddler, you know, maybe he's, like,
a child molesting priest,
and then they kill him, and then when they get the librarian, it's, you know, the librarian is attached to archiving this, you know, child snuff ring, whatever, and, you know, they kill him, and then that leads to the, you know, that whole snuff film ring. And after that, the final kill is the hunchback, and it's the kid. There's this weird fascination with child murder and child sacrifice throughout this film. Well, at the same time, conversely, being very overbearingly anti, like, Christian and very heavily pro, almost like pagan or Nordic religions. And I don't mean that in the sense of, like, the movie is actually that way, but, like, the characters are that way. They hate, like, all mention of, like, Christianity. But when you get to, like, the more earthbound religions and things like paganism, like, they seem to be very open about it. It's very interesting. And that kind of pertains to something else that I want to mention later. It's just, like, the movie just keeps bringing up this whole, like, child abuse thing, and it just gets, like, more and more bleak and upsetting. And, like, that's one thing I just, like, don't like about the movie, but it kind of on, like, a personal level. But, like, if you're looking at it, like, from a movie really trying to explore its themes, it's kind of good that it's as overbearing that it is by exploring them.
Well, not only that, with the adding to your themes of, like, child abuse and that kind of stuff, the line that I brought up to you guys that Gal just drops, referring to the previous mission that went wrong and stuff.
That's
you had
things.
That
they were talking about the Kiev thing.
Yeah,
about killing, like, toddlers.
Yeah,
like,
Gal has the line
can't stop.
The line of just, like, at least we're not killing a toddler, you know. And it really, you know, that really holds a lot. That single line, I think, really holds a lot to the themes of the film, like you're bringing up, and also brings a lot to the movie to understand and
understanding the character.
Yeah, man. Understanding the character and what went on with that mission that brought him to this and brought him to this point where, you know, he doesn't want to, but then once he gets back into it, he's too into it. And I think that's another theme also, is just, you know, he's so reluctant to ever do a job again, but then once he gets back into it, he's, you know, so far gone.
He gets back into it with a hammer.
Yeah, exactly. he goes to town on that guy's knee and just, like, his hand and, oh.
It's the knee you're focusing on, not, like, the hand or the skull.
Oh, okay.
The hand that he, like, breaks in half.
Sorry, just, like, that moment, the moment when he starts, like, just smashing that guy's knee, I'm just like, oh. And then and then, like, he starts hitting the hand, and it's like, oh no. And then the skull, you know, it progressively gets worse. But, like, getting hit, like, so hard, like, 7 times in a row by a hammer full force, like, that's just like, ah, because he's, like, hitting right on the knee. And I was kind of thinking of, like, that looks really real. I wonder how they did that effect, if it was, like, a prosthetic leg that they just, you know, had there, or, you know, had the actor just, like, or, like, a stunt man just, like, sit there with, like, a wood plank on his knee, which is, that's absurd to even think, because they probably were a lot more practical.
Yeah, that sounds quite awesome.
But I actually, like, I sat there and thought that, I'm like, oh, did they put a board on his knee while they did that? And I'm like, that's stupid. They had a bigger budget than that. But yeah, Ryan, what were some of the themes that you felt with this and that you saw with this film?
You know, in all honesty, I wasn't really, like, paying attention to themes games or like looking for like any special like commentary or anything like that. I was just sitting down and just I'm going into it and reading the description. I thought this was just going to be like a fun like action hitman movie. So I kind of just sat down and just, you know, wanted to enjoy it as just like a entertaining ride.
And I think that kind of speaks to how I first went into the film, where I was expecting this very Lynchian kind of surreal, otherworldly, hallucinogenic kind of film at one point. But, you know,
we're all expecting very different things from this movie. That's interesting.
And I think according to Netflix, you know, the plot synopsis they had, they just summed it up as like, you know, a hitman comes on to take a job to, you know, turn some money for his family. I'm like, oh, okay, so I'll just sit down and enjoy this as like a action movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And really it's not, you know, and I think that's part of, you know, with the critics when they first, they really respected this film a lot. A lot of critics really respected it and went out of their way not to spoil this movie or give away, you know, a whole bunch about this movie.
I think just comparing it to The Wicker Man is a way of spoiling it in a way, but.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that right there. You know, even like looking at the trailer and you're like, oh, okay, so they look like cult members and stuff, so, you know. That kind of hints at it right there, that they're going to get into like some cultish shit, you know, and
on Netflix, like they had like a picture from the movie, and it was a guy wearing one of the masks.
Yeah, so exactly.
I knew something like that was going to come up
that
at some point.
Look like a hitman.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Anything else you guys want to add about the film that you wanted, that you felt, you know, with themes?
Well, not so much with the themes. You know, obviously, like, there's this whole thing about, like, you know, unpopular wars and, like, recession and stuff throughout the movie. But something that a lot of critics that I've read have brought up is that they view this movie as, like, having a lot of comedic elements or, like, feeling more like a black comedy. And I don't know if you feel that, because I've never been able to... No? Because I've never been able to...
It really worked for me as a black comedy, no.
Yeah, because I've never been able to see that myself. Like, there are some moments where he's, like, beating the guy from the, like, the snuff film guy, like, against the wall until, like, he's completely unrecognizable. Like, that's kind of funny because it's so, like, over the top in, like, an Ed 209 type way. But I've never seen, like, out-and-out comedy from it.
Yeah, I've never – I don't get that –
And I know that Ben Wheatley has done a comedy horror movie called Sightseers. I know he has the capability of doing that. Mm-hmm. And there are like funny, weird, Lynchian comedic kind of style to moments in A Field in England. But this movie, I can't see the comedy. I can see the comedy in Jay and his character overall, because he's kind of like aloof. But
yeah. But I
don't know. I don't see the story itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, in the story, I don't see any elements of, you know, it's a very, very serious film. It's
It's a very severe movie.
It's very much I would put it as a suspense thriller horror, you know, psychological.
There you go. Yes, I would definitely include psychological.
Mm-hmm. It's very psychological because, you know, a lot of the themes are dealing with Jay's mentality and that kind of stuff, and sort of his psyche breaking and that kind of stuff. And
so none of you wouldn't put anything about it as being like besides having comedic moments, you wouldn't say like, nah, it's, you know, it's a comedy. Yeah.
No, the thing is this, even though
it's a hard movie to decipher. And I think like some people could see that from it.
Mm-hmm. I could see some people drawing like some humor from it, as like some of the scenes being just absurd with how dark they are. And I could see people drawing that, but I didn't see that. I didn't see that at all. I don't see this as a comedy. I don't see this as something it does have some lines that are just like, you know, kind of, but
of the dialogue between Gal and Jay might be kind of funny,
but I think
but that'd be about it.
There is the dinner scene where they attack the Christians who are singing.
Yeah,
that is
pretty
funny.
That's funny, but at the same time, it's kind of striking and very just like, oh my God. Like, and really, I was more like kind of on the edge with that scene, because I'm like when I first saw it, I'm like, is he going to do it? Is he actually going to do it?
Yeah.
Like, is he like, and he's talking about this stuff. And then, you know, even just, is he going to go over there and do something and stuff? Like, is he really seriously that? And again, that sort of feeds into what he's becoming also, you know, this Christian group, just like, yeah, Jesus. And he's just kind of like, oh, yeah. And then
takes his guitar. It is really funny. It is a really funny scene.
I think. But at the same time, like, I'm kind of on the edge of the seat watching.
No, I am too. I agree. But the moment you realize that, like, he's not going to kill them, it's really, really funny.
Yeah. It's just kind of like, you know, a sigh of relief and a chuckle kind of deal and stuff. And, you know, you have Gal afterwards being just like, you know, hey, sorry about
my friend.
If you're
talking with the big man, put a good word in for me.
Yeah.
Order them all drinks. Double orange juice is for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but I don't think lines like that really are enough to say that this is a comedy or a black comedy. You know, and
I agree.
And I know that, like, you know, black comedies, you would deal with like subject matter like that and scenes like that. But the thing is, there's no consistency of that throughout this film in order to really classify it as a black comedy. So
maybe it's just so fucking subtle in its comedy that we're just too stupid to see it.
Maybe it's like a comedic genius. Maybe that's it. You know, it's just like,
we are just too fucking dumb to see any of that shit.
So,
we apologize.
Yeah. So any final words you want to say about the film? Would you recommend it? Would you, you know,
what did we learn?
What would you take it away, Scott?
I didn't learn much besides what a little bit of frustration feels like when you're watching a movie that is very singular like this. This is one of those experiences that falls on a little bit of the more negative side. Not entirely, but more in terms of my overall understanding of what's happening. That happens sometimes when you watch a lot of movies like this. I think it's a great film, but it's not a movie I think a lot. It's not a movie that I think about a lot. It's not a movie that I think is as great as all those other places who say it's great think it is. But I think it's a great movie. I've said all this before, but it's definitely worth watching. I think every movie is definitely worth watching, but I do think that you could get something particular and definitely very, very singular out of this. It kind of invites you for that experience. It's definitely a very singular movie, and you will get a very singular experience. And I don't know, it's eerie as shit, and it should creep you out. And if it doesn't, I don't know.
I'd say
and
this
you're
film...
tougher than I am, and you are the cynical genius that is Dustin.
Yeah, I would say this film is definitely, like you said, it's worth your time. You're not gonna, you know, you're not gonna walk away from this film feeling like you wasted time on it. It's a great film. Like, it's not,
I mean,
an
but
amazing
you could.
Film.
That's
you
the could. Thing. It's hard to it's true. It is a good movie, and I want to recommend it. But I do think at the same time, it's kind of hard to recommend because you could be very frustrated by it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I want to say to people, if you made it through this movie, you know, and you were not too particularly happy, give it another chance. Take into consideration what we've said here and what we've explained and that kind of stuff, and rewatch it and give it multiple viewings, because I think this works more on this film works a lot better on upon multiple viewings. And I you know, that is going to be a bit time taken up to dedicate to this film, but I think to get
only
that
an hour and 35 minutes,
yeah, but for multiple viewings, that kind of stuff, and giving it another watch. Yeah, I'd say it's worth it. I'd say it's worth it. You're not going to walk away like, and I've heard so many people just be like, oh, this movie, you know, and then watch it again.
About
like,
Kill List? And...
Yeah. I've heard people be infuriated and frustrated with it, but then go back to it and be like, okay. And the thing is, you really have to consider what you've learned the first time and what you saw the first time and apply that. And it's one of those films where you really... it works better upon multiple viewings, and you need to apply what you know already and what's going to happen, and not so much focus on what happens at the end and focus on what happens throughout it, and you'll find more things throughout it. This is a film, upon multiple viewings, you'll pick up different things, and you know, listen closely to the dialogue and that kind of stuff, and you'll be able to deconstruct it a lot more. And you know, that may be hard, but there's subtitles on, you know, Netflix, so that'll help out. And that's not, and I don't think that's a problem with the film. I, like Scott said, that's a problem with, you know, people having trouble understanding accents and that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah, it's more the problem of the viewer, and I'm not saying, how dare you not.
I'm an asshole. I don't understand other dialects. I'm uncultured, and I apologize.
But that's not the fault of the audience, but it's not the fault of the movie either. So it's sort of just like, you know, just be considerate of it and just trying to work through that. This film, it's not amazing. I'm not going to give it – it's not a 10 out of 10. It's not an A-plus film, but it's impressive. It's impressive on a technical standpoint. Ben Wheatley, it's – I'm impressed with him. I'm definitely going to check out A Field in England. I'm definitely going to keep up with what he's what he does in the future and everything. I have to check out Sightseers. I heard that one's all right.
It's a ringing endorsement.
I heard it's all right, but I'm definitely going to, you know, this is a filmmaker that I'm going to continue on with.
It's definitely very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely is. I reviewed A Field in England, and I said that Ben Wheatley is definitely very interesting. But do you have any final thoughts, Ryan? Anything that you learned from this film?
Well, you know, I'm a little bummed that I had to miss out watching Old Boy watch this.
Because
I was really looking forward to Old Boy. You know, everyone says it's a masterpiece, but I thought it was watchable. I mean, yeah, I'm with you, Dustin. I don't think it's like particularly a masterpiece or anything like that, but it's a good movie. You know, I was gonna say if you enjoy like Hitman movies, you might enjoy this, but like that's not even really what this movie is like. I can't really think of anything that you could compare this to, really.
I can see someone going into it under the belief that it is a Hitman movie and just being totally bored or frustrated by it.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like the situation that happened with Drive and that kind of stuff. I've heard so many people.
I was going to mention Drive, but I decided not to. But yeah, it's very much like Drive in the sense that like it's a movie that is out there. It's its own thing, and it's very good, but it's impossible to market and try to find an audience for.
And yeah. I've heard so many people make.
I agree with that. Yeah,
similar arguments
to the Kill List.
I've heard people get frustrated with Drive and frustrated with this movie on the same level of just like, oh, it wasn't what I wanted it to be. And it's just like, well, sorry, what do you want? You know, I've heard so many people just like, Drive wasn't Fast and Furious. And it's like, it never was Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
And it's just like this, you know, people just like, this wasn't, you know, a Hitman movie where they're going out and like,
it wasn't a Tarantino movie.
Yeah. It wasn't a Tarantino movie.
Yeah. Cause I was thinking the exact same thing. And that's funny that, Ryan, you went into it, you know, thinking it was a Hitman movie, because I'd never gone into this movie, you know, thinking about like a hit it in the context of being a Hitman movie, just like a horror movie.
An
English horror movie, which are always weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I certainly, you know, wouldn't have thought it was like a horror flick at all. But yeah, like I really don't know what to compare this to. I don't think there's any movie I've ever seen that I can compare this to. So, I mean, it's hard to find, like, something to relate it to our listeners. You know, anything, you know, if you like this, you might like this. But I can say, you know, it's an hour and 35 minutes. It's a solid hour and 35 minutes. There's much worse things you can watch. This is actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I would give this.
Old Boy is admittedly better.
Yeah, but you're comparing like Old Boy, which is such a solid film.
Yeah.
And this,
is... Netflix has it under their thrillers category.
Mm.
So. Hmm.
But yeah, the closest thing I would probably say this is, in terms of like you could compare this to is like what you brought up, Scott, and many reviewers said is Wicker Man and these like sort of weird British horror films with these twists and cults and stuff, you know, it's very much in tune
like
with
Wicker
that.
Man, you might like this one.
Yeah. I would say that, but don't expect,
if Wicker Man was full of jump cuts. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well,
one thing I don't like about the movie is the overabundance of jump cuts, but
I think that's all part of the style and everything, and I think it's a more stylistic sort of film rather than like Wicker Man, which is sort of your basic kind of 70s cult film, like cult
about cults.
Cultist. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Yes. Good boy.
That's the word I'm trying to get at. But yeah, it's very much in that, but it's very much more stylized and more modern and more it's not upfront about what it's about, and it's more you know, Wicker Man, you have that ending, which is like, here's your plot twist. Whereas this one, it's like, here's this twist and this one and this one and this one and stuff. And I think that's the kind of difference between the two. And then also, like, I compare it to Rosemary's Baby, but in a way where you're not learning about what the cult is doing, and you're very kept in the dark along with the character.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what I learned about this is just, you know, Ben Wheatley, he's kind of someone to look out for, in my personal opinion, with this and, you know, the hype of some of his other films. So,
and the movie's on Netflix, people. So mm-hmm. it's not hard to see.
No, it's not. It's very accessible. You can get it like instantly, like you said, Netflix. And you could probably, I've seen this one at,
I think,
like,
it's
Walmart.
On like iTunes and like mm-hmm. Amazon for like digital rental and all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've seen this at like local like Walmart and that kind of stuff a few times here and there. So it's not that hard to find. And I'd say watch it on Netflix, see how you feel about it. If you dig it and you want to watch it like whenever and when you can, pick it up. Because this is something I'd say, like, you know, add to your collection if you dig it. You know, definitely, because it's worth, you know, showing friends and showing people and like I said, multiple viewings. So. Yeah. All right. So right now we're going to take a break and look at the trailer for the next episode, and we'll be right back to wrap up the show.
The high school debate. Kids wielding words like weapons and brandishing ideas like axes. Hal Hefner had hardly a voice at all.
Good morning, both. You are esteemed opponents. Good morning.
Deformed people are the best. Maybe it's because they have a deep resource of anger. So here I am, ferreting out the debating talent from the masses.
It was like a little wave breaking over him, and it said the name, Ginny. While his life, his brain had been waiting for this thought.
I'm glad you came to me, because this is exactly the sort of problem that Mommy and Daddy would royally screw up.
Do you know if she wears a bra? Wanna see a bra?
Don't ever touch the stuff I steal. I steal it, it's mine. I'm gonna reach in your eye sockets and tear out your pancreas.
Is this some traditional Korean dish? Because it has an exotic odor.
But that's tuna casserole.
You should try to do an accent.
What? Good afternoon. Let's get down and dirty.
Coach Lumley said someone always gets creamed and never comes back. I'll be filling that slot, whomever that may be.
I don't really know what to do here.
This is the girls' room, so.
I tried this one with my pants on Winchester, our old dog, but he won't sit still and he died a month later. I need
someone. Are you her little brother?
I'm her ex-lover.
Security need you to deal with a stuttering boy in the main office.
Does it count as second base when it's broken into the shirt?
Maybe in public school.
You can all just kiss off into the air.
You're just so messed up!
Yeah, but I won't mind. They'll hurt me bad, they do it all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they do it all the time.
It's really a shame that you're not hyperactive, because that I can work miracles with.
All right, we're back, and that's the trailer for the next episode, which we'll be covering Rocket Science. And Ryan, that's your pick. So we'll be looking forward to that. It'll be a change up of sort of feeling with these last two episodes of very
after the intense horror movie that was The Woman, and the interesting British horror film that was Kill List. I'm doing an indie comedy drama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is kind of...
We'll try to get away from horror.
Well, with what we have planned out for the next while, you know, we're kind of stepping away from that. And we're not just a horror podcast. You know, we want to make that blatantly obvious. Blatantly obvious, you know. We want to cover these films and get these films out to you people. And that we think you would enjoy, that we really do enjoy. So hopefully you're tuning in and like checking out these films, and then, you know, we are spoiling them for you, and but hopefully that's more adding insight after you've gone and seen the films.
Yes.
Yeah, because we want,
advised you listen after you watch the movie.
We want to inspire like critical thinking about these movies and thinking deeper about these movies, rather than just like, oh, that was bad because didn't like it, or oh, that was great because critics said so. You know, we really want to inspire people to search out these films and watch them and share them with everyone. And we're essentially doing this to share these great films that we love with you, so
to expose ourselves and to you to more movies.
Yeah,
all of the movies, watch them all. I that's your homework.
Yeah, there you go. So go back, if you haven't seen any of the movies that we did on previous episodes, go and watch all of them multiple times, and then come back to us and then challenge our opinions and what we thought of the film. And, you know, that's the most we're trying to do, is this, is just inspire individual thought and seek out these movies and give some
challenge
insight.
Challenge us to a pistol duel. You do that either.
I'm more of a fencing kind of guy, but sure. Oh, yeah, if you want to do pistols, then
sure. Dueling pistols.
All right, so Ryan, where can we
play us out? Play us out, Dustin. Do it. Well, end first, the show.
Well, first, let's find out where we can find you guys. Ryan.
Normally, this is where I would tell you guys to check out my blog, One Movie at a Time, but I'm actually actually putting that on hiatus for now. I'm taking some time off to work on some creative writing. I've been working on some short stories and some poetry, and hopefully I can get some of that published soon. And, you know, if we do so, hopefully I'll be able to pimp myself out on the Facebook and Twitter pages. Would that be all right with you guys?
Absolutely.
Oh, we wouldn't stop you.
No, yeah.
But until then, the best place, if you wanted to get in touch with me, would be social media. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Instagram, all those good sites. Just search for Ryan Liscotti and I'll pop up.
All right. And Scott?
You can find me on Twitter at Bad News and Shoes. You can find me on Letterboxd, I believe, at Bad News and Shoes, or at my name. You can also find me on Facebook through the group. Through the Cadaver Cinema Radio group. I believe Cadaver Cinema Radio also has a Twitter.
Yes.
And where can we email Cadaver Cinema Radio, Dustin? And where can we find you?
I'll get to where you can find the show in a bit. You can find me at Grandpa's Kisses on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook, Letterboxed. Where
totally
else can you find me?
Totally fucked up the flow, but okay.
I bring my own flow, okay?
You know? Yes, he does.
Yeah. But more importantly, you can find the show on Twitter at Cadaver Cinema Radio, or no, at Cadaver Cinema. You can find us on Facebook. We have a like page that you can follow. We post interesting articles and that kind of stuff that educate you in a bunch of interesting stuff in film and whatnot in the culture and everything. And we post interesting stuff like I posted earlier this week. We now have t-shirts you can get at redbubble.com. So you can get a logo of Cadaver Cinema Radio, wear that on your shirt. You can get a throw pillow, wear that on your couch. You can throw it on a coffee mug, throw it on a whole bunch of stuff. So you can get our logo, Cadaver Cinema Radio, on your body. Not
anywhere.
Tattoos, but yeah.
You could.
On you can get it on material and have it on you, around you, in you.
Oh God!
you can listen to the show, of course, on iTunes. Head to the iTunes store, search Cadaver Cinema Radio. You can find us now on Stitcher Smart Radio, where you can instantly have episodes on your phone without downloading or syncing. Awesome. And you can find us on Podomatic, which is sort of our home domain of where we host the episodes and distribute them out. So check it out there. You can download it there, get it on iTunes or Stitcher Smart Radio, and check all those out. And yeah, so that's where you can find the show. And finally, the email. You can email us feedback about the show and whatnot at cadavercinemaradio@gmail.com. So do that. Check it out. Hope you guys are enjoying the show. I want to thank you guys for being on the show again and doing this with me. And I want to thank everyone for listening. Get some t-shirts.
And get some goddamn t-shirts.
Yeah, seriously. Because actually, hosting costs are kicking the shit out of me, you know?
And kicking the shit out of him, guys. Yeah.
Help us out, you know. That really does help, because that money does go into hosting costs.
T-shirts.
Mm-hmm. Yes. All right, so that's going to be all. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode, and good night.
Good night. Get a t-shirt.
Good night.
All right.
You came by, I was so glad. Though sadness covered the smile I kept for you. I was waiting for the cloud to pass over. Then I could show stayed, but you left. I was more confused than I was before you came. I was frightened as our insanity and tears. I shouted for you to stay. It could have been better if you had held my hand and smiled. Question why my face was so desperate. Please forgive me.